Computer, initialize holosuite.
And welcome to another episode of The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Perry.
I'm your host, David. Tonight we're talking about Season 5, Episode 21, Soldiers of the Empire. Before we continue, you can find us on Facebook, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube as The Fire Caves, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast.
Absolutely, and as I say every single week, you should find us and follow us because we are great, we are awesome, we are good time, and we are not on X. So if you've been looking for us there, sorry, you're not going to find us anymore. The old stuff is there, but I've wholly given up on figuring out that crazy hodgepodge of a website these days. Also, I will once again apologize for the backlog in episodes. I have finally figured that part out, but in order to get us caught up, I'm going to have to release the last few manually before I can put everything back on automatic. So what's going to end up happening, just in case you are wondering, is for those of you who just listened to the podcast, over the next few days, you're pretty much going to get an episode a day. They're all going to come out that way. That way it's not overloading anything, and I could also make sure that the episode is being released. I was scheduling things beforehand to just auto-release, but I must have messed something up. I'll blame it on me. I'll accept the fault there for that, even though I think that it had more to do with the platform where I was uploading things. But again, figure that out. So it's going to be just an episode a day, every day, until we get caught up, and then we're back on our regular, just a couple of days delay. For those of you who watch us, you don't have a problem. You see everything live, and you can always go back and watch the episode on YouTube. So yeah, and please feel free to do so. Leave us any comments, questions, concerns you may have. We'll try to answer those when we come into the next episode and so forth, or address them however you want to. You can also reach us through our Facebook page as well. But other than that, let's go ahead and get right into our this week and into this story. But of course, as always, I'd like to check in. So, David, how's your week been?
Week's been good. Work was interesting. It's been busier lately, which is good because it was slow there for a couple months. Got into this kind of weird back and forth with my boss on this one order. Obviously, I won't go into the details here, but it was just one of those things where, like, I was like, are we doing this? Like, is this, are we really doing this? But okay, you know, whatever. The other thing was, is I read Three Body Problem, as I mentioned, I think, last time. The show on Netflix just popped, just came out. The reason I read the book is because the show just came out. And as I mentioned to you, Perry, there was one actress who shows up who I was like, who is that? I know that face. And who is it? It's Rosalind Chow, Keiko O'Brien.
Rosalind Chow herself
plays a very important character in the show. Only halfway through the show, there's 8 episodes. I've seen the first 4, and she's a very important character. But oh my goodness, from Deep Space Nine, the 90s, to the 2020s now, 2024 now, she's obviously gotten older. So it was her age difference that I didn't recognize. But as I mentioned to you when I told you about this, in the first episode, one of the other characters, a female character as well, sees her picture of her as a younger woman and says, oh, you were beautiful when you were younger. And she goes, yeah, time's a bitch. I was like, wow. Like, I can't believe this other character is like, yeah, you used to be pretty. You used to be beautiful once upon a time. Anyway, it was just hilarious. When I figured out it was her, I was like, oh my gosh, it's Keiko O'Brien. So that was a fun little thing. Yeah.
So Rosalind Chow is 66 years old. She has been in a lot of different TV shows over the years, not just Star Trek Deep Space Nine, of course. She was in a show called little show called MASH, and then another show called After MASH. She was quite young in that show. And then, of course, we see her in Next Generation, Deep Space Nine. She was in that movie, The Joy Luck Club, and we talked about that as well when you mentioned her to me when you recognized her initially. And then, she's just been in a string of things. And, I mean, she popped up in ER. Again, you know, when I did my my binge watch of that show, found her there. So, yeah, she's been in steady, you know, stuff over the past 30 years. So right. She's been doing quite well. Glad to see that she's popped up in something. I don't think I've seen her in anything in a while. I think that the last real bit of like something on TV anyway that I knew that she was in was Deep Space Nine. And then after that, I don't think she's really done much TV wise. I think she ended up doing either more movie stuff and then maybe some like theater plays and things like that. And then this show, The Three Body Problem that you're talking about, is her first return to a television series, or in this case, we now would consider it a streaming series here in 2024. So, she's a great actress. And I mean, I've always felt that she is underutilized in Deep Space Nine, and she adds a very nice, you know, realistic element to this show and to her relationship with her husband, Miles O'Brien. So glad to see that she's back on the back in the game, I guess, or doing something once again. And I'll have to check out Three Body Problem. Now I have even more of a reason to look at the show. I'll admit, when you told me and you were like, guess who's in it, my first thought went, of course, to Sheree Ekdashley, because I mean, she just kind of stays in the back of my mind these days. Right. But hey, I'm just as happy to see Rosalind. That's not going to diminish anything for me at all. I'm just as happy that Rosalind Chow is doing things. But yeah, so good. Okay, another reason to watch Three Body Problem. I've seen the previews for it, and I'm looking forward to that. The other thing that has dropped, and I have not checked it out yet, but I'm going to. I was going to do it this weekend, but things kind of got away from me because I had other things I was working on. But X-Men 97 came out this past weekend. I'm really excited. I've seen all the previews for it. There were some behind-the-scenes things that I got to watch as well, a lot of with the voice actors and things like that who are going to be on the show. A lot of the original voice actors have returned to do their roles, like the voice actors for Storm, for example. They got the original back. You know, I know there were some changes for some other people, some other characters. I think that Magneto and Rogue and Jean Grey, they're the ones that stand out to me as I think all of them are different. It's to be expected. Some people are just not going to be available. It's been 30 years. Some people are just not going to be available for things. So, but I am glad that certain other characters, their voices are back and that they're, you know, still doing it. From what I've heard, it's great. There's only been two or three episodes out at this moment that you can watch, but I've heard that it's been really, really great. The drawings, the graphics of all of it looks fantastic. The way that they have kind of transitioned from how the show looked in the 90s to today, kind of blending everything in to give you a more seamless transition. They've done a really great job with that. I'm really looking forward to checking it out. Unfortunately, as much as I'm eager to do it, I'm probably not going to be able to do that until next weekend. As much as I really did try to push to get it done this weekend, there was just too many other things that I was doing that I couldn't do that. Do you have any intention to watch it?
X-Men 97?
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't have Disney Plus, so no. I mean, I never watched the original show either, so I don't have a nostalgia for it.
I certainly did.
Yeah, you let me know.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching it when I was growing up, you know, in the 90s and everything, and it was in that block of TV where, you know, Batman, the animated series, and then you had X-Men, and then you had Spider-Man, and that was kind of like rounding out my afternoon of shows that I would watch, you know?
Right.
So, yeah, and I mean, you've seen Batman, the animated series. So yeah, it was in that kind of period of really great animated shows that they did for some strange reason. Like they had all this other stuff geared towards kids, and these were some really kind of harder hitting
Yeah.
Animated shows. Gargoyles was another one, which is also on Disney Plus, which is kind of in that same vein. Like you thought, oh, it's just a cartoon, it's a kid show or whatever. But if you watched it and paid attention, it was definitely not. And X-Men fits into that quite well. So
Gotcha.
I'm excited to see how they've continued it. And then also what changes, you know, because the mutant story always seems to be relevant because it is a commentary on, you know, humanity and how we treat outsiders and so forth. So I'm interested to see how they've addressed that and how they've kind of taken into the whole cultural changes that we've had in the last 30 years and put that into this new show. So hopefully it's not too heavy-handed because that is something that bothers me sometimes. But otherwise, I hope it's good. So, and again, I've heard nothing but good things.
Good,
So,
good. That's what we want to hear.
yes. But we're not here to talk about all that. We're here to talk about Star Trek Deep Space Nine, another show from 30 years ago that we're still obsessing over. Notice a theme? Soldiers of the Empire, the 21st episode of the fifth season here. So we're coming up close to the end of yet another season. Did you want to do the recap or do you want me to do it?
I could do it. I don't know whose turn it is, but I'm happy to do it this time if
I don't recall,
yeah.
but yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay, guys. So yeah, this is Soldiers of the Empire. So this episode finds Martok at the beginning, General Martok, the Klingon general who has been stationed on Deep Space Nine, under the care of Dr. Bashir, because he and Worf had been battling in the holodeck, and the practice fighting, as we all know, is actually very real for the Klingons, and apparently Worf almost nicked a artery, but he's fine. So we know Martok's on the station, but he gets word from the Klingon High Council that they want him to command a ship that's being sent to the station to go find a ship that has been lost. It was on the border of the Cardassian territory and has been lost. And as we know, the Cardassians have allied themselves with the Dominion. So this is important. We need to find out what happened to this other ship called the Bamoth. He asks Worf to join him as his first officer because they're good friends. And he agrees. And Jadzia Dax, kind of last minute, gets herself appointed to go as well. So we have the two, Worf and Dax, our two main part of cast members on the ship. Now, unfortunately, the ship that's sent, the Rotaran, has been for the last 7 months unable to win any battles, and the crew is very demoralized. They, in fact, one of the other members of the ship at one point says that this ship is doomed to either lose in battle or be destroyed. That there's no hope for this ship. They are doomed to die. Of course, Worf doesn't accept that. Worf is like, I'll train them into making sure that they are a fighting group, but we don't have time to get them into a fighting group. We have a mission to accomplish. When they come across a Jem'Hadar ship, Martok chooses to be overly cautious and not take the advantage of taking on this Jem'Hadar ship and seemingly winning an easy battle. This, of course, raises an even larger problem with crew morale because this looked like an easy win. So if the general, who, if we remember, had been captured by the Jem'Hadar for over 2 years, when he was released with the rest of our with Worf and Bashir earlier this season, this is the first time he's commanded a ship. This is the first time he's ever gone up against the Jem'Hadar since, and so it seems that he has changed as a general. He is now more cautious and maybe a coward in the face of the Jem'Hadar. So Worf, especially because of Dax's prodding, feels that he might have to tell Martok that he's going to take over the ship because the crew is about to mutiny. In fact, there is a scuffle that breaks out between two of the crew who are talking about one of them saying that the Jem'Hadar, they're programmed to be better than anyone else, even though they have no you know, morality and no code of honor, they're just better than everyone else. And so, unfortunately, Dax has to step in and use her phaser to stun one of the other fighters, and that leaves her with blood on her outfit. And so when Worf sees that, he knows that things are coming to a head. So as they reach the Bemoth, it has moved over into Cardassian territory because it's been, you know, floating for some time. And it has a message that's been playing that says that there are only like 30 people left alive. Again, General Martok, feeling that this is a trap, doesn't want to cross the Cardassian border to try and rescue what he thinks is not actually 30 people, but just a dead ship. So Worf challenges Martok to a duel, saying that you're, you know, you're a coward, I'm taking over the command of the ship. But Martok does fight back, and so Worf, in a one of those moves where you can't really tell if it was, you know, he lets Martok win the fight by getting a really good stab on him. Martok, then being full of battle energy, is willing to actually go ahead and attack a Jem'Hadar ship that does decloak, or it does start coming toward them, and then they apparently do win the battle. They do save the 30 lives. They go back to the station, and Martok, knowing that Worf had allowed him to win the duel, gives him a place in the House of Martok. The sash that Worf always wears, he had the House of Moog symbol on it, and Martok says, if you'll give that up, and you can join my family and become part of the House of Martok. So the son of Moog has decided to join the House of Martok. As we might remember, the House of Moog was officially disbanded when Worf disobeyed what's his face again? The commander Gowron. Gowron. When he disobeyed Gowron when they went to attack the Cardassians. So, yeah, that's the episode. Did I miss anything?
No, that's essentially it. It's a great episode. Once again, we have Worf kind of getting, you know, taking an L to get a yeah, win later on. You know,
that
seems to be the recurring theme for the character, which always bothers me a little bit. But no, you hit the high points here, and we're going to get into it, of course. Again, Mr. First Time Viewer, what are your first impressions and thoughts on this one?
Yeah, this is a great episode. As I've said many times, I'll just read it again. The Klingons and my enjoyment of them as a species and as characters is the greatest success that Star Trek has pulled in its history of my watching the show. Going from, what the heck? These guys are ridiculous. What is this nonsense? These guys don't make any sense. This warrior culture, blah, blah, blah. It's just a bunch of... No, they are a well-ordered, well-realized alien species, as is detailed during a conversation that Dax has with the other officers of the station,
yes,
with Kira, mm-hmm, and O'Brien and Bashir. It might look on the outside that they're always ready to kill each other in order to, you know, get promoted. But Dax says that no, actually, you know, they enforce very strongly the command structure. You're only allowed to challenge someone to the death if they commit some sort of grievous.
Yeah, there are certain charges that have to be leveled against them, and it also seems like, as we saw play out in the episode, you can't just level the charge, but it has to be one that you can prove, and another support,
right,
as well.
Right.
And as Dax says, you know, you can't just go around challenging anybody. You can only challenge a direct superior.
Right.
So you're not like the lowly, you know, ensign couldn't challenge the captain,
right,
you know, for anything like that. But yeah, you know, you have to follow a set of rules and a code of conduct, and you know, it shows that they are quite a diverse people. We see,
right,
diverse Klingons here really for the first time. We've got a Klingon with red hair on the bridge, who's the engineer.
Mm-hmm.
We've got an older Klingon serving as the helms officer. We've got a short-haired, burlier Klingon who seems to be just, you know, very depressed, I guess, is the best way to describe it.
Klingon depression is an interesting thing.
Yeah. We got a, there's a blonde Klingon at one point who comes through, ends up getting strangled later on in the episode, you know. And then, you know, like the older one just seems to be, you know, taking perverse delight in being, you know, a jerk and going around upsetting other people. So they're just as diverse and complicated as any human group that we've seen. They just are, you know, stronger and better built for combat. But yeah, the Klingons, I would agree with you with that assessment. They are probably the greater success story that Star Trek has had when it comes to fleshing out not just characters, but a whole culture and character character traits, followed very closely, oddly, by the Ferengi, in my opinion.
Yes.
The ones that I feel like that we should think of the most for this would be the Vulcans, and I just don't feel like we get it. I feel like we treat the Vulcans with such an air of mysticism that no matter what they do, we still don't get a true understanding of them as a culture.
Yeah.
And that's a shame because they've been a part of Star Trek since the beginning.
Yeah.
You know, since the beginning of Trek, there have been Vulcans here. So, yeah, it's weird that we get more development with these two other species that came significantly later than anything else.
I think there's two things to say to that. So obviously you've watched all Star Trek, so you know. It would seem that on some level, Vulcans are just humanity perfected on some level, right?
I would agree with that. I think that was initially supposed to be the point, that the Vulcans were supposed to be what humanity could become once we shed all of these other issues right down to our emotions. You know, you get rid of your prejudices, you get rid of your, you know, preconceptions and your harsh judgments and everything else, and you're left with this kind of distilled objective morality.
Right.
I think that's what the Vulcans are supposed to be.
And so if on the original show the Klingons were therefore maybe the inverse of that, they are kind of a twisted humanity, they're just warring all the time humanity. Because again, as we remember from the episode where they go back in time to the original series episode, they looked like humans, but they just had, you know, different garb, basically.
Yeah. So I would say I wouldn't necessarily say that they were supposed to be the inverse of humanity. I think they were supposed to be. There was a, because at the time in Star Trek, you know, in the 60s, our cultural fear was of Russia and of the Russian politic and space program and arms race and science and so forth. And so, you know, and the thought that Russians were more aggressive than, you know, Americans were, was also a very prevalent feeling of the day. So I think that's what the Klingons were supposed to represent. And even if you watch some of the earlier episodes, the Klingon accent is distinctly Russian at some points. So I feel like, and I don't know if it was, and it's not always, but there are certain ones, like that episode, the Tribble episode, the guy speaking to Scotty in the restaurant or whatever that they're in has a distinctly Russian accent at one point. But I think that they just do it as a way of kind of just, you know, kind of a wink and a nod that these people are our adversaries and they're more aggressive than we are. Over time, you know, I think that the Klingons became like, there's this weird amalgamation of cultures in the Klingons. Like, you do still see some of those early I guess Russian aspects to them, but then they seem to kind of like meld into this like Japanese samurai type of honorific culture. And then they pick up aspects of other, you know, again, just other cultural blendings that you see here and there. And it's really interesting to like watch it play out as they're trying to give this, create an identity and using us as the mirror for it. But yeah, I mean, if there was ever going to be a species that's supposed to be like the opposite of humans and showing us at our worst, that's supposed to be the Ferengi. The Ferengi are supposed to represent the most terrible aspects of us. They're greedy. They're self-centered. They are incredibly jealous. They can be hostile, petty, rude. They're very perverse in certain manners. Yeah, the Ferengi are supposed to be the worst representations of us.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes sense. But I guess what I'm getting at is that Klingons, as this culture that's very warlike, you know, the whole purpose of the Enterprise and Federation is not war, it's diplomacy. They have firepower to back themselves up, but whereas it seems like the Klingons certainly present themselves in the opposite light. We come with a willingness to fight, and we'll be clear about it.
I feel like they were maybe initially also supposed to be a little bit of the quintessential space pirate, you know? They show up, they don't care about rules and regulations beyond their own. They have no respect, really, for other cultures, because they feel like because we're strong, we can take whatever we want, and they do take whatever they want, and if you can't beat them up or they can't beat you up right away, they have no problem with, you know, fleeing. Right. And, you know, kind of being like, well, you know, the discretion is the better part of valor, so forth and so on, you know. But, they're very much I feel like they're more aligned with space pirates than anything else in the early days. Then later on, we do see a change, you know, and then that kind of communist Red Scare fear is transferred to the Romulans. And that even starts in the early 60s when we first get the introduction of Romulans. They're way more militaristic and, you know, everybody for the state minded than any other race that we will later see. And they stay that way. Right. They really stay one dimensional. But the Klingons, we do see a greater development. We get Klingon opera. We get the three legendary fighters, Kane, Kor, and Koloth, and we get the stories about them, and here we have Martok, and we've got all this other stuff that's going on with them. So yeah, the Klingons definitely get an upgrade when it comes to expansive storytelling, and that starts really with Next Generation, and you know, we see with them kind of expanding some things with Worf, and you know, while I credit a lot of Deep Space Nine with giving Worf and Klingons a lot of development, that last season of Next Generation really kicked that off. If you go back and watch some of that, we see like the episode where there's multiple universes and Worf is jumping between universes and stuff. And he goes to a tournament somewhere and wins in one universe, loses in another, gets, you know, all this other kind of stuff. We hear about things like that. He takes Alexander to see a performance of some Klingon opera and meets his son from the future. I mean, there's a lot of little bits and pieces that we get of Klingon culture that start there and end up getting blown up big time here in Deep Space Nine. So I'm really glad for it. I like the Klingons. It makes them a likable culture.
Right, right. Yeah, they are hands down best thing they've done, because every time you get to see more of them, they're more fascinating every time. So for example, the last time we were on a Klingon ship, to my recollection, like this was when Riker was the officer from the Federation that was brought on as opposed to Dax, and he also had to put his, you know, foot down as you're gonna respect me like Dax did. But this time you actually got to know the crew better. Mm-hmm. And how the crew respond to how does the commander of the ship act. If the commander of the ship is, you know, a coward, you know, that is a reason in a Klingon culture to step down. You have to give a good reason for what you're doing. And it can't be, oh, I don't want to lose a battle. It needs to be, I'm saving our strength for a better victory to come kind of thing. Which is interesting, because on a surface level, it comes off as very basic, which I think is what the Klingons are, why the Klingons, at least initially for me, and I imagine for other people, come off as a bit simplistic. But that's also where they have a chance to make them deeper and more interesting. You know, they are, the reason the Klingons are the way they are is, this is Klingon culture. Their very bodies have extra hearts, extra ribs, all kinds of funky things. They are a warrior culture. And it they've managed to make it work for me. And the reason I'm bringing this up, I kind of mentioned it before, Dune, the desert planet, Hoth, the ice planet, you know, like even the Ferengi as being the greedy ones, they always care about money. That is really sometimes overly simplistic. It can work in context, but the Klingons have managed for me to rise above the simplistic front view of they're the warrior culture, honor culture, No, there's actually there's stuff behind that, below that, and they've worked out how to make it work.
Sorry, so you know, I totally agree with you, and I was wondering how much of that Star Trek is to blame for, because one of the first races, going all the way back to the original series, one of the first races that we're introduced to, again, are the Vulcans. And, you know, notoriously, that show had, you know, budgetary concerns, and trying to show diverse aliens and so forth, all those things cost money. And Gene Roddenberry and company were trying to produce as much of a quality show on a budget as they could. And one of the ways they got around a lot of problems was by making things very one-dimensional. And so with the Vulcans, they solved the problem of having to show any kind of diversification by saying, we've all adapted to this one particular mindset. We've all decided that the way we want to live our lives is totally devoted to logic. And mm-hmm. therefore, all these other things are extraneous, they're unnecessary, and we don't need to show all of this vast differential of person, of culture, of whatever, because we all have bought into this one particular mindset.
Right.
That did not translate that well until much later, but all you see, the visual representation, is everybody looks alike. Everybody wears the same hairstyle. Everybody has the same color clothes on, same kind of cut of clothes on. Right. So then that became the thing. So when they would introduce new aliens, new characters or whatever, they all followed that same kind of cookie cutter format. They would come up with what they needed to for that particular alien, but then that became the representation for all of them. We know, and people bought it. People went for some reason. It just became like logical in our head. Of course, even though we on our own planet, we walk around, you don't have to travel that far to find people who look differently, sound differently, dress differently than you do. And yet for some reason, we were like, no one questions this. And so when later development of other alien stuff came along, and subsequently when they got to, you know, the Next Generation, Deep Space Nine and so forth, it was still very much the same. And other sci-fi products went that way too. You know, like you were just pointing out, Star Wars, instead of calling them, you know, by their planetary name or whatever, they were just, that's the ice planet, that's the desert planet, that's the whatever. You know, they all do it. We all find these reasons to simplify things, and then we're not given enough of an explanation. Dune, I'm going to say, is an outlier because there...
It is.
You know, while they do that, while there is the desert planet, there is a total explanation for that.
There
are also other planets that show very diverse people and planetary structures and so forth.
Right.
Unfortunately, you know, that's not something that's totally gone over in the movies per se. Mm-hmm. But so you'd have to read the book. But when it comes to something that's only ever been on television, only ever been seen on the big screen, that explanation is wholly lost. And Star Trek seems to have done a little bit of work to retcon some species, like we see again with the Klingons, what we're seeing with the Ferengi, and we'll continue to see. But we haven't really seen it with a lot of others yet. And they still fall back on the trope. I mean, for all we've seen of Cardassians on Deep Space Nine, they are still largely one-dimensional. We get a couple of one-offs here and there, but for the most part, they're just militaristic oppressors. The Romulans, again, the Romulans were introduced all the way back in the 60s, and they still have not changed very much in how they're represented in Trek. Now, I will say we have to put a little asterisk by that, because if you've seen any of the newer Trek stuff, you know, Discovery, for example, there have been some changes to the Romulan people. But that's for another time.
Sure.
So, but yeah, definitely, I feel like that's probably Star Trek's greatest failure, and I'm glad to see they are making changes, is that they're adding cultural differences within
the cultures
they create. Yeah.
Yeah, I want more of that. I like that. You're totally right. I'm using Dune as an example, but when you go under the surface, 100%, there's nuance there too.
Oh yeah.
But yeah, I was thinking as I watched this episode, it didn't have to be, but it would have been a great two-parter episode. just building up some of the tension of you know, maybe the what's going on with this other ship. Maybe they got chased for a bit or something. They could have turned around and fought off a Jem'Hadar ship as opposed to letting themselves be chased. So I don't think this had to be a two-parter. It did work as a single episode. But it was such a great concept and great storyline that part of me wishes just I wish we could have drawn it out more, made some more of it. I imagine we'll get plenty more of Martok, so I don't think it's a problem. But
so behind the scenes, I will tell you that this story development was first done by Ron D. Moore of future Battlestar Galactica fame. He basically, there was a request at the time in the 90s, you know, CD-ROM games were quite popular and were on the rise. There were there was one game in particular that had just come out around this time. It was called Star Trek Klingon, or Klingon Academy, I think it was called. And so in this game, you could play as a part of the Klingon Empire. You were part of the Klingon Defense Force. You served on a ship. You had this character that you were doing these various tasks with. And basically, the story goes that Ira Steven Bear, our producer and showrunner, was aware of this game, liked this game, and wanted some aspects of this game into an episode. The initial write-up for the episode, to include certain elements, was actually quite different. It was more about Worf leading a mission on the Rotaran than having Martok involved. But with Martok's complexity, and he was quite a popular recurring character, the story was retooled to fit him a bit more and to include Worf as well. That was kind of going to be the tie-in there. They had a whole story worked up that even included them going, you know, into the Klingon underworld, into the Klingon version of hell, and confronting Worf's father, Moak, you know, and freeing him from hell as Worf seeks his redemption and so forth. So that definitely was a way more involved plot, and they recognized that it was way more involved, and they just didn't feel like it was the right time to go into the Klingon mythos so heavily. So that very thing that you're saying that you like and that you appreciate that they did, they were like, yeah, let's scale it back a little bit. We don't need to go into the deep philosophy here.
I'm glad to hear that they were able to rein themselves in a bit.
They definitely did. I think they crossed... When they mentioned going into the Klingon Hell, which is called, what is it called? Grethor, I believe. And, going into all of that, they were like, yeah, bit much. You've now created heaven and hell for Klingons.
I was going to say, you've committed to a certain type of plot line. Yeah.
Yeah. interestingly enough, though, the storyline did not entirely die. It comes back later on and is used in an episode of Star Trek Voyager called Barge of the Dead, in which the half Klingon, half human officer B'Elanna Torres has her own moment where she must venture into the potential grips of hell to save her mother from a terrible fate. Interesting episode, yes. Further development of Klingons, yes. But yeah, started here in Deep Space Nine and didn't finally see fruit until Voyager.
Right.
Just goes to show you again the lasting impact of the Klingons, and that diversification works, and that it propelled even into another series. We haven't really seen that with any other races yet. We have our mainstay races, but we don't really see that kind of cultural development.
Right.
And I can't think of another race besides Ferengi. If anybody knows of another one that you feel like we've gotten a massive cultural download on over the years that I'm missing out, please let me know, because I'm drawing a blank at this moment.
Right.
But while we're doing that, I do want to ask you, what would you say would be like your standout moment for this episode? What do you think was like, when you watch it, you were like, that was great. That was an impactful moment.
Huh, that's an interesting question. I would say that the Dax, I'll say this to start. Dax was, She had a lot more to do in this episode than she's had to do in a lot of other episodes. We have complained time and again and again and again that Dax was just basically a background character who got a bigger old paycheck than everybody else who was a background character. That's not true for this one. She is here. Yes, let me put it this way. I say a lot. Let me put it this way. Dax is here for Worf, as the other characters say. You know, you're his lover. You're only here for his lover. No, my bed is empty by choice, not by...
She says, my bed is just as empty as yours, Leskit. However, mine is empty by choice.
That's it. That's it. Right. So, Dax, as we've well come to know and learn, she appreciates Klingon culture, especially because Curzon Dax, the previous host, was a ambassador to the Klingons for the Federation and got to know them quite well. And as the redheaded woman says, my mother and Curzon were...
Had a thing.
Yeah, had a thing.
Yeah.
Of course, like, John Cena says he had a thing for a lot of women, and that woman says, and so did my mother. So, funny moment. But yeah, all that to say that Jadzia Dax, she gets a lot to do here. She's pushing Worf. Again, I'm not 100% thrilled with, like, when she just, like, I'm coming with you because it's fun to jump these things on you. Like, I don't think that's a way to do a relationship. You don't jump like that on people.
She certainly seems to enjoy, you know, just kind of dropping little bombshells on him to see if she can rattle him.
Yeah.
You know, the forever unflappable Klingon who is now with this person she's like the consummate fan of the jump scare. And yes. She's trying to jump out at him and see how he'll react. And all he ever does is he's just like... stares a little bit, and then he sighs and he's like, okay, well, good. It's like, well, so you could have told him. There was no need for the lead up. And
that scene was also kind of like, okay, all right, is because in the previous scene Dax was with Kira and Bashir and O'Brien, and they were all discussing how they were all going to have to take on Worf's duties. And how it was,
and
kind
she
of
doesn't
pain.
Correct him, and she doesn't yes. correct him at all. She's like, nope. Yeah, they're like, oh, and Dax is going to do this, and Dax doesn't say a word. And I'm like, Dax, you know you're not going to be on the station. How are you going to do that work? So, I thought that was an interesting way to also explain exactly what it is that Worf does, because I'm sure that has been a question on people's minds, you know, with all the officers that they have on the station already, and then we bring in Worf from, you know, Next Generation and everything, and he's the strategic operations officer. Okay, great. What does that mean? Right. What do you do? We finally get a little bit of a breakdown. You know, we know that Worf gets certain intelligence reports that are basically for his or the captain's eyes only, and he has to determine what's what. We know that there is something that he does with weapons and weapon systems that Chief O'Brien ends up having to take over. Dax was supposed to do fleet deployments or maneuvers or something like that, and coordination or whatever.
Yeah.
So she's not doing that. And then I forget what it was that Kira was going to be taking up as a part of the duties that Worf was normally doing.
Let's not
forget that we see Worf also tinkering away on the Defiant, installing new systems when General Martok comes through to offer him the position of first officer. Worf seems to do a lot for there already being five other officers on the station. Worf seems to do a whole lot.
Yeah. He's got Nog with him, doing, you know, the cadet
grunt work, scut work,
and it's great because they're having trouble with some system, and Nog is like, "This just damn thing just doesn't work." And he's like, "Okay, I want you to go back up, and I want you to download the master program one file at a time." And Nog is like, ready to blow a gasket.
And we've all been there. How many of us have ever been annoyed with as a boss, a supervisor, somebody who now wants you to redo the thing, even though you know it doesn't work? You being the person who's got the on-the-ground experience, you've worked with this system a bajillion and one times, and then here comes this person who thinks they can just make it happen, and you're like, Yeah, I've wanted to strangle a boss or two in my day too, so I understand. Very relatable moment. And then, of course, when he's cornered by, Worf on one side, Martok on the other, I love that. He's like, "Can I just get by? Like, I just need to go over here. You guys, why?"
Well, it's so funny too because the actor of Nog, I forget his name at the moment, but
Aaron
he's
Eisenberg.
there you go. Little guy. He's a
Yeah.
Frankie. Frankie, you're short. And I mean, even Cork is short, but Nog, he's
Yeah,
still
Nog is
at least he's
exceptional.
big.
I think he's like 5'2", 5'3".
So it was a funny moment because the two men are just talking, the two Klingons are just talking over him. Little tiny person down here.
Like they've literally forgotten that he's there.
I kind of wish the camera had forgotten for a second just to kind of bring it home. Just to
Oh, do
like,
like a
just
do
his.
like a back and forth between the two of them, and maybe just up close on their faces,
Or,
and
and
then
then like a
a
pan
last
down
establishing
at
shot.
some point. And he's still there, just kind of like, I need to. That would have been funny. Of course, Star Trek doesn't usually go for comedic camera angles. I don't think
No.
it's ever done that. And LeVar Burton directed this episode, we should mention. So he's obviously a tried and true hand at this. He wasn't going to be making any funny camera angles, but that would have been a fun moment to kind of land that joke home, but
They would do it
whatever.
now. That's the crazy thing. Like, as serious as Star Trek has always been, now with the later new Trek stuff, they would definitely sneak that in now. Like, if they were filming Deep Space Nine now and keeping all the other beats the same, somewhere someone would have said the same thing. Because now with shows like Lower Decks and Prodigy, and even with some of the comedic beats they do on Discovery and Strange New Worlds, somewhere someone would have seen that and said, just a little bit. Just throw us a little bone here for this. So yeah, they would do it now. There's the evolution of Trek. They're finally funny after 30 years. They finally get comedy.
So you asked earlier, like, did I have a best scene? I would say there wasn't any one scene that stood out as the scene. So to compare it, like that episode recently where Kira was taking care of the dying Cardassian, I didn't like that episode, but I felt Nana Visitor's final scene where she was actually like crying as Kira. She was having an emotional reaction to what was going on. That was amazing. So there wasn't anything like that for me here, but I do feel the whole episode as a whole was a complete episode. It was good. However, we should talk about poor Worf, man. In order to make someone
Oh,
else look better, he takes it on the
we're
chin.
definitely gonna spend some time talking about Worf. There's a couple of things I want to say, both about Worf and Michael Dorn. First, I'll start with Michael Dorn and give him a lot of credit for the fact that he's able to deliver some of this, the Klingon language and stories and talking about the rituals and stuff. He can deliver it in such a way that it does add an air of authenticity to it. When he's in Sisko's office early on and explaining why he wants to take on this mission and the importance that it has, and he talks about that moment when, he had thought about basically having Jem'Hadar assisted suicide when they were prisoners, and how Martok, without saying anything, talked him out of it. I thought that was a great moment. That was kind of the great moment for me, because you're listening to
Oh, you're
him
right.
relay
That
this
was
story,
a good scene.
and he's relaying a very personal story. It's a short scene, but he's relaying such a personal story, and he's just like, in that moment, I was totally ready to have this guy kill me. And then the shame I felt from looking at Martok, I realized I couldn't go through with it. I couldn't do this, the way it's delivered. I mean, there's this weird kind of like, I was calling it like a personal, casual personally or something like that, something along those lines. Anyway, where he's very intimate in this moment, revealing something very personal and vulnerable about himself and how he got through it, and how he credits Martok with giving him the strength to move through this thing, and now he feels like he needs to, help and support his friend, who may or may not be struggling at this point. Who, as far as he's concerned, he's just having a crisis of consciousness on a small scale. He doesn't, until they get on the ship, doesn't realize the significance of everything. But yeah, I really enjoyed that, and that's definitely a credit to Michael Dorn to be able to deliver that so well.
You're right. Yeah, that scene is great because, of course, it's a callback to that episode where they were captured by the Jem'Hadar and they fought. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember this scene because, you know, Worf is explaining his perspective on the scene. This is our first time understanding his perspective on the scene. We haven't heard him say this before.
Right.
And in the moment, it wasn't clearly indicated to the audience necessarily what was happening. Am I remembering that wrong? Did we know that Worf was...
We did not know it then. We just knew that Worf was not willing to walk out of the fighting circle.
Yes. Okay.
That's all we knew. As he says in the moment, I will not yield.
Yes.
Is what Worf says in the episode. I will not yield. So right. We knew that. And so from us... as external watchers of the moment and from our limited understanding of Klingons, we could take that to mean that Worf is just being intensely prideful and saying, I'm here to fight. You're going to have to kill me to get out of here.
Right.
But then to hear the man himself speak it and say that, no, he had every intention of dying, of letting them kill him, because he right. didn't see an end in sight. He thought this was now going to be his future, and he didn't want that.
Right.
And he, you know, was totally ready for that, and Martok is the one that saw this and knocked some sense into him, basically.
Yeah.
It really does reframe that. Yes.
Yeah.
Does reframe the whole scene.
Yeah, and it's a great scene, too, because even though you're supposed to be like, I'm just a little old human, I'm from Sisko's point of view, I don't understand what he's saying. Like, no, I understand what he's saying. Like, yeah. I get it. They had a split-second, eye-to-eye, understood-each-other kind of communication, and maybe I need to go back and watch the episode. Maybe there's that moment where, you know, Martok like, grabbed him by the shoulder or something right there, and like... You know, it wasn't communicated, obviously, verbally, but even as an audience member, we caught it on some level. And now we can go back and, like, really know the moment.
That's a good idea.
We should go back and check it.
That's a good idea. See if we can pinpoint the moment of Tovadok, it's called.
Yeah.
That'd be interesting.
My one kind of critique of that scene, and it's more for the character of Sisko, not necessarily for the writing, but for the character of Sisko. You know, he says to him, you know, I don't know why you want to go. Like, what does he say exactly? How does he say the line? I mean, it is what he says, but there's more as a lead up to that. Like, I know why Martok wants you or something, but I don't know why you want to go. And for me, it's another example of Sisko, it feels like he's just kind of being patronizing to Worf a lot. He feels like he's always treating him as... Don't you mess up. Don't you... I know you Klingon types. You Worfy, Worf, Worf. I know how you came onto this station and, you know, you had that one run-in with me right at the beginning, and I just want to remind you. But I don't know if that's accurate.
I'm gonna disagree.
Just one quick thing.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Because Sisko knows Dax, for example, they're friendly. They're friends. They have a relationship. They joke. But Worf doesn't have that with other people. It's not who he is. So I know that Sisko might – let's say Sisko wants to have a more intimate relationship with Worf, but Worf just isn't the type to offer that. So he's asking for that. And as we just explained, Worf gives that intimate, I want to go with him because I feel I owe him my life. And it's a great honor, etc. Mm-hmm. But I just – again, I'm not saying it's the writing that's wrong, because I do feel like that makes sense, but I do want – I don't want Sisko to ever feel like he has to, like, babysit Worf, if that makes sense.
I understand.
Yeah, sorry, understand. You were trying to say something there, yeah.
So I just wanted to – you know, I completely understand what you're saying. Worf was invited onto the station at Sisko's behest.
Right.
So while there is – I think there's an aspect of Sisko where he feels like he understands Klingons in general. But let's not forget the kind of man that Sisko is. He is very much a person who is used to having a more personal connection with those that he serves with, that he works with. As you pointed out, him and Dax are quite close. Now, that's over two lifetimes, of course, of them being close, and that Curzon was his mentor. So their relationship was a lot different than it would be for anybody else. But even still, he's quite close with, you know, Julian and O'Brien and Kira. And, you know, they've been to each other's, you know, quarters and done, we've seen them do dinners and stuff together. We know all of that with them. But Worf being new to all of them, Worf is, yes, he is definitely the outsider, but I think that Sisko wants to get to know him. He wants to understand him. Right. And it's hard when you think you have an understanding of a person's culture, and then you have that, you have a person of that culture right in front of you, and they seem to run slightly atypical of what you have come to expect from that cultural background. Yeah. So now you're not really sure how to address that person, but you still want to, especially since you're, well, best friend is in love with them and is, you know, engaged to them and so forth. So I think this was an opportunity that Sisko was taking here to try to understand Worf a little bit better. And he was, maybe he was a little bit conflicted because, like I said, he understood the maybe the cultural significance of what Worf was wanting, but didn't understand why Worf would want to do it when Worf's own, from what he knew of Worf's personal background, has always been that Worf's getting crapped on by Klingons left and right. Why would you want to go and serve on this ship full of people who have done nothing but, you know, insult you? They've removed your family of all of its standing and honor. Gowron has made you like public enemy number one. Right. And, you know, I get that you and Martok had this time together in the prison camp, but I mean, really? Do you really want to put yourself in a situation to be surrounded by this again? Like, I think that's where Sisko was coming from.
So,
on
Sisko
a lot of that.
Was more asking, like, are you being strong-armed into doing this? Is that your biggest concern? Okay.
Yeah, like, are you doing this because you really want to, or do you feel like you've got something to prove? Like, why are you going? Right, because you have duties here, and I'm not wanting to send you out on some kind of weird, you know, mission where you're trying to like prove your mettle or whatever. I don't have time for that. You are a Starfleet officer. You have a job here. Right. But, you know, Sisko also understands loyalty, honor, duty to oneself and to, you know, So I think that that's what that was.
Yeah,
once he uncovered that.
Because I think that is legitimate. That is the legitimate reasoning behind what he said. I guess now all I want is I want Sisko to somehow express that and make that a clear concern of his. Hey, Worf, I'm so glad Worf is here. He's been a great addition to the station. And then I say it to Dax, like, tell me about Worf. You know, am I right in being concerned about this? And then her telling him what she thinks. So I'd love to see that scene of that. If that's,
I think
you're right.
That, yeah. I think we'll get some of that in the coming episodes. Is this something that you have to kind of like keep in the back of your mind as to how Sisko works as a person, as a commanding officer? You know, the way he demonstrates his belief in people and his support of them, it's different. He doesn't go up to everybody and clap them on the shoulder and whatever. He is also very receptive to how they want to be treated. Worf wants to be treated like an honorable person. He is this, he is not just your officer. He is this kind of paragon of a certain type of honorable status. He wants to be addressed as such, and I think that we see that with Sisko when he gives him that respect, and Worf returns it. As it's pointed out, you know, there's a line that comes up later on where it talks about how Worf is intimidated a little bit by Sisko, and it's because, you know, Sisko is very, again, he's in your face. He doesn't have a problem with asking anybody any kind of questions and demanding answers. You know, Picard, I always talk about the regal distance of Picard. Like, we always are supposed to look at Picard as kind of like a, you know, a king or a prime minister or a statesman, you know, and you approached him on this kind of elevated pedestal to a degree, whereas Sisko is right down there with you. He's still your leader, but he sits side by side with you, you know. It's a different way of dealing with somebody that I think that, you know, Worf is having to get over because he was so used to the way that Picard did things, and now he's having to make this transition. But yeah, we'll see it. I think we'll see it in time. So now, since we've asked, you know, your best, what would you say is your least? What do you feel like is a weak moment of this episode? Something that you're like, oh, they could have either done better, or you know what? We really didn't need that.
Yeah, in the response to that, I'd go back to the Dax being like, I'm coming along, woohoo! Like, okay, maybe it streamlined the episode enough to like get some other things into the show for the, you know, 46 minutes we had. You know, we'll have Dax going to Cisco and saying, I want to go. But yeah, her just kind of showing up. Just, I feel like Dax doesn't give Worf the respect that he is desperate for. Not because he is a prideful person, but because he is someone who comes from a proud culture and he respects that culture and tries to honor it himself because that's who he is. And I feel like Dax, knowing that about him, instead of really at times honoring that, I mean, maybe I'm not saying she does it at all because she knows Klingon culture and she tells Worf like, hey, you got to pay attention here in this episode. But I wish, I feel like too often she decides to make it a joke. And I just,
I think she
that's.
makes it more of a joke with him because he does take everything so seriously.
Right.
And so if you are a person who you're looking for that same kind of reciprocal respect and she's not always giving it, I can see how that would be annoying.
Well,
Whereas some people would find it playful, I
yeah.
could see how others might think of it as annoying. She's not respecting him for how he wants to be represented. Then there's also the whole thing of, well, he can be too serious and he needs to learn to lighten up. You know, like
Fair
it's.
enough. I just wish that if Jadzia is joking and telling and making and trying to laugh and trying to make him laugh, I mean, obviously Worf doesn't laugh a lot, but either I want
No.
Dax to quit poking the bear, or I want the bear to laugh too. I want Worf to be like, you know, I watched you here, like, you got one on me. I
Well,
mean, again, that's not Worf, so I know
no,
that I'm
that's not.
asking for
I
a
think
lot,
that,
so.
that's not Worf at all. So I think that the what we're getting is kind of the best that that's ever going to be. It's Worf being exasperated and resigning himself to the fact that that's just who she is, and that that's never going to change. Just like she has kind of ha going to have to just, you know, realize that's who he is,
Right.
and he's never going to change. You know, we've talked about that before. Like when we saw the episode. Let he who is without sin, you know,
Right.
that was a major element of that particular episode. You know, them going to Ryzen, having their whole, you know, derailment of a vacation. But Dax does a great job here in this episode of providing Worf with a bit more
Excuse me.
ground level context for the rest of the crew. You know, because Worf has never really served with the Klingon crew before.
Yeah.
And this is his first time stepping into a role, not just as being a member of the crew, but he's the first officer.
Right.
And so once again, I think we talked about this before. Worf presents himself as a person who has studied all aspects of his culture, of his people, but
Right.
he's never really had to do a lot of these things in practice.
Right.
So he's kind of like that kid who can tell you the line from the textbook, you know,
Yeah.
recite it verbatim, but
Right.
doesn't really have any skill set in real world application of the knowledge that they've internalized, you
Right.
know?
Yep.
And so when they get those first forays, it's very formal, it's very distant, and that's exactly how Worf appears when he comes onto the Rotaran.
Yes.
You know, he's
Yes.
very formal. He's, you know, he's doing everything by the book according to the ritual and so forth.
Yeah.
And Dax is like, okay, that's great, and you've satisfied all that, but there is this other thing. There's real flesh and blood people here, and you need to, you know, adjust and need to incorporate that as part of who you are as well. And it takes him a while to see her point, but I don't think he ever would have got it without her. Dax has that
Sure.
ability to draw that out, and we see her when she's got them drinking blood wine and they're laughing and telling stories and she's teasing Lesket and so forth. You know, she has that ability that Worf absolutely does not have.
Right.
And without her, their mission probably would have failed.
Yeah. Yeah, Dax certainly understands that part of being a Klingon is bluster. Worf doesn't bluster. That's the
No.
part that's the perfect example of book knowledge versus practical knowledge. And Worf doesn't know that part of it is is bluster. Now, when Worf says he can do or will do a thing, he means
he's going to do it. Yeah, he's going to do it.
Not in a lot of other Klingons, it's bluster. It's a call me out, prove me wrong, type thing. You know, but don't actually challenge me because I might actually back away from it. But yeah,
and you never really know if he's joking or not, because another famous episode where Worf is having to work with Garak, in Purgatory Shadow, when he goes with Garak and he tells Sisko before he leaves, at the first sign of betrayal, I will kill him, but I will bring his body back intact. And Sisko's like, I'm not really sure if you're joking or not. And Worf says, we'll see. And then leaves, it's great. And it's a great, funny moment. Yeah. But at the same time, it's like, as funny as that is, he could absolutely mean that.
Yeah.
He could mean that. And that's the greatness of that character as well, and his delivery. So, once again, yes, Worf had to literally get stabbed so that Martok could be elevated here and kind of reclaim his glory. So once again, Worf's having to just get beat up. Like, he's our our prime skill set. We know he's a great fighter. We know he used to be a part of the aristocracy. We know all these great things about him, and now man's got to get stabbed and lose his house crest.
Yeah, that was a quite surprising moment. But yeah, the episode starts with Martok in sick bay because he's bleeding all over Bashir's carpet because Worf stabbed him in their practice session. So the expectation, of course, is set up that Worf would win any fight. So it has to be that he let Martok stab him.
That's right, because Martok was already weak. So we know, because when they fight on the Rotaran, Worf cuts him on the arm again in the same place where Julia had been, repairing earlier. So we already know that Worf has the ability to wound him, and he's quite precise because he hit him in the same spot.
Right.
Hit him in the same spot again. That's actually kind of cold-blooded, Worf. I mean, how to tell the man you're going to kill him, right? You just, same spot.
Yeah. And then at the end of the episode, when he says to Martok, or Martok says to him, how did you know I wouldn't kill you? And Worf is like, I didn't. It's like, oh, okay. Mm-hmm. But yeah. It's like,
Worf had a lot of faith, a lot of trust in the one-eyed general.
The reason I'm bringing all this up, of course, is, I want to watch the Picard show and see season 3, and I want to see Worf having come into his own on some capacity.
Oh my gosh. You're going to love it when you do the scene when Worf comes in all big and bad. Man, it's great. It's great. I might watch it tonight. I'm not going to tell you where it is or when it happens. I know I was surprised. Yeah. I was surprised when I saw it. I was like, what's going to happen? And then it starts. I was like, oh, it's war. Yeah. So you have your whole, I want you to have the same moment.
Good.
So it was great. It was great. So yeah, you'll enjoy that. And then he gets a couple, after that opening scene, you don't really see him do much until closer to the end, but he gets another pretty cool fight scene too later on. Yeah. So enjoy all that when you finally watch it. Heck, you know what? You don't even have to watch seasons 1 and 2. Just watch 3 and you're good. You don't need the other ones.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, and they're all on Paramount Plus. So, any final thoughts on this episode before we close it out? We're almost right on time.
Yeah. Good episode. Great Klingon culture. Getting into that. Dax brought to the forefront just to participate heavily, which is great. Good stuff. Hope we see more of Kalar. Martok.
Wow.
I think they mentioned Kalar at some point in this episode. So
I don't think they mentioned Kalar. I don't think anybody's talked about Kalar in quite some time. She's pretty much a part of his distant past. Again, remember, Kalar died in, season 2 of Next Gen? So here we are all the way in Deep Space Nine.
Or was I thinking
season
of
5.
Who's the Klingon, the great general who died and was...
You mean Kalis.
Kalis, that's who I meant. When Kalar, yes. Kalis. So close.
I understand.
Yeah.
Well, guys, I think that's going to do it for us on this episode of The Fire Caves. You can, of course, find us and follow us anywhere you happen to do your social medias, except for X, of course. And please, you know, if you have any questions, comments, drop us those in the on Facebook or on our YouTube channel, of course. And as I said earlier, we'll get to those as soon as we can. There may or may not be a contest in our future, so I'm just going to let that be known right now as we, you know, we'll work through the logistics coming up in the next few whatevers, maybe going into season six here. We'll do something special. But we'll be keeping you informed on that. And of course, with all these Trek shows that we've got, you can watch them all on Paramount Plus. I highly recommend that you do so. It's a lot of great entertainment there. And then you can join us and comment and say whether or not you think that we are, you know, doing a good job with Deep Space Nine or not. Not that we're going to take your consideration, your opinion into much consideration. We're still going to do the show. It'd just be nice to hear. That's all. Well, anyway, until next time, guys, take care of yourselves.
Thanks, guys.